Hello and welcome to the world famous Driving You Crazy podcast. This is the show where we talk about all things transportation, anything that gets you from here to there. I'm the traffic anchor and the transportation reporter for Denver 7 News, Jason Luber. If you would like to be a part of the show, you could always give me a call on the listener hotline. The number 303-832-0217. And of course, all my contact information is in the description of this show. As you just heard, I always start off the show by saying the world famous Driving You Crazy podcast. And while that is true, and we are heard in all parts of the world, I can now add award winning to the intro as well. And no, it isn't the best podcast recorded in my basement award. This is the Driving You Crazy podcast. Has been named the best of in Denver's Westword newspaper. Yay! Now, Westword is a Denver institution. It's the free, somewhat counterculture newspaper that comes out every week. Every year they do this best of edition where they name like the best restaurants and the best bars and the best people and the best things to do and all kinds of best of stuff around the city. And for the longest time, back years and years ago, they would name, and I think they still have over the last, but they didn't do as many, would name like the best TV anchors and the best radio shows and personalities and the best weather people. And there was always great fodder in the local media about who won that year for best TV or radio people. It was great. Well, this year is the 40th anniversary of the Best Of edition, and Westword named this very podcast, yes, this overall show, Best Of for 2024. So this is what the paper had to say about the show. It said, Denver 7's Jason Luber is the Dean of Denver Traffic Reporters. There you go. I'm the Dean. So on TV, whenever I do a segment, or like my Driving You Crazy TV segment that I do every Tuesday mornings, they call me the traffic expert, right? It was Holly, our former news director, came up with that because she didn't want me just to be traffic anchor or traffic reporter or traffic guru or whatever. But maybe now I can change that traffic expert to traffic dean. I like that. Anyway, it says the Dean of Denver Traffic Reporters, known for clear, concise highway counsel that's saved locals untold hours of their lives. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's why I do what I do. His many years of expertise are on full display throughout Driving You Crazy, a podcast that provides even more insights to commuters trying to get from point A to point B as efficiently as possible. Recent episodes have explored the metro area's worst intersections, offered a dozen predictions for electric vehicles, and explained why LED traffic signals have typically had trouble in snowstorms and what's being done to address the problem. With Driving You Crazy, it's green lights all the way. There you go. And then had a link to Driving You Crazy, the podcast that I use Podbean as my host, and so then a link to that. So thank you very much, Westword, for naming this the best podcast of 2024, Driving You Crazy. I really appreciate it. It's now the world famous and the award winning Driving You Crazy podcast, and I think I will update the intro to reflect that. Well, it's been a while since we had our talking traffic segment on the show, and I thought it was time to bring it back. Talking traffic is where we hook up with a traffic anchor from somewhere in the great US of A and talk traffic. And today, we're going to go to ground zero for one of the most significant transportation stories in the country right now. We're going to Baltimore to speak to Christy Breslin. Christy is the brand new traffic anchor at our Scripps station, WMAR-TV. But Christy is not new to traffic. She's been reporting traffic in Baltimore for over 20 years, and she joins me now. Christy, thanks so much for being here on the world-famous and now award-winning Driving You Crazy podcast.
I'm excited to be here. And first off, can I say congratulations for winning the Best of 2024? That is just fantastic. Not surprised at all. What a great podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Christy. I appreciate that. And you do all kinds of great things. You have all kinds of awards too, as well. And I want to start way back before you won anything, back to when you were starting in TV. Did you start in TV because you wanted to do traffic? Did you want to do something else? Because a lot of people, when they get into the traffic business, it's usually to go to be a reporter or an anchor or somewhere else in TV. So talk about why you started in TV and was traffic a way for you to really move into something else?
Well, to be honest with you, Jason, it's a little different for me because I am, you know, I'm not one of those people that minds talking about my age. I'm 46 years old. I just turned 46 in February, and I started in TV when I was 21. So there was a local station called Harford TV, and believe it or not, I'm still doing my local show over there. I focus on a different nonprofit or event that happens every month in our community. So I was doing that. And, you know, of course, I always thought that being a news anchor would be amazing. So there was one girl that was in our area, and I had been watching her, and she was a very popular traffic anchor. And being, you know, I grew up in Philly, but I've lived in Baltimore since I was two. So I know the roads backwards and forwards. And I thought to myself, gosh, I could really do that. Well, I had a neighbor that was a photographer at one of the stations in Baltimore, one of the NBC affiliates. So he connected me with my current company, Total Traffic, iHeartMedia, and I auditioned to be a traffic fill-in. Well, I ended up getting it. And I started filling in on all three networks. I was doing radio, and for a while, I was even doing lottery drawing. So I actually wanted to do traffic.
Oh, cool. So, but you couldn't play the lottery while you were doing the lottery drawings, could you? Because that would be a little bit awkward.
It would, but if I would have won, I would have been okay with it.
Okay, good. Good. That's great. So you said you grew up there in Philadelphia, and also you spent a lot of time, obviously, in Baltimore. So I'm sure that you've had a lot of connections with the roads, and it was probably easy for you just to think about how people should get around.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I have been in Baltimore since I was 3 years old. So I've lived my whole life here. And, you know, I've been all throughout Maryland, and my extended family's in Philadelphia. I've got a brother in New York. So I did a lot of traveling around. So I know the back roads. I know where all the hot spots are. I know the places to avoid, and I know the times to drive. So I thought, you know what? I could actually help people and have fun at the same time. So that's exactly what I did. And I've never looked back.
And after doing traffic for a little while, did you learn to love it more, or did you start to loathe it, or did it ever get on your nerves? And did you learn to appreciate what traffic and transportation reporting really is all about?
Oh, no, I fell in love with it even more because I really, it's a public service. I'll tell you one thing that's really funny. I know you'll appreciate this. Is way, way, way back, like 15 years ago, I was reporting traffic, and there was we had a traffic call-in line. There was a bunch of students from Towson University. Well, they were doing construction in Towson, and I knew a couple of them because they were, you know, friends of friends. And I remember one girl called me. She goes, "Hi, Christy." She goes, "Oh, I'm stuck in Towson, and I'm going to be late for class, and I'm going to get in big trouble for this. I'm going to lose a lot of points, and it could affect my grade." And I said, "Well, no problem." So I took the station letterhead and I wrote her an excuse and I sent it to the professor, and she got out of it.
Nice. I did that on a more wide scale basis. We had a huge epic snowstorm, and I wrote up a excuse note in the same basic idea. And it was on the letterhead, and I put it out there on my Twitter feed. So anybody that needed to just fill it out could print it up and then hand it into work. And so they were delayed because of this epic snowstorm. And I said it was okay to be late.
Great minds think alike. And let me tell you, Jason, she wasn't the only person. I had a couple of other people after that happened. I'd say three or four students, and I happily wrote them excuses. But hey, it was legitimate. And I understand because, you know, it's college. Things come up. You can be late.
Yeah.
So they were very appreciative, and they still keep in touch with me to this day.
Oh, that's nice. My guest is Christy Breslin. She's the traffic anchor for my sister station in Baltimore, Maryland, WMAR-TV. So you said you were working for iHeartMedia. I worked with 850 KOA Radio for a long time, which is now owned by iHeartMedia. So I'm familiar with them. And before that, it was named Clear Channel. And so when you were working for TV, were you working for then iHeart, and then they kind of farmed you out to the TV station? Is that how it worked out?
That's how it does work. Yep. I am contracted through iHeart through the TV station. So a lot of people think I work directly for the TV station because I'm listed on there. But I'll tell you, since I started WMAR, I've known the news director, Kelly Groft. We went to the same high school. and I've known the general manager, and wow, the people over there, they treat me like royalty. I absolutely love it. I started February 26th, and before then, I was at another affiliate since 2011, and then from 2003 to 2011, I was filling in everywhere. So it was a great thing, and I really enjoy what I do. And you know, sometimes traffic can be a headache. For example, I had when my kids were little, and we used to get in traffic jams, and they'd look at me and say, "Oh, Mom, this is terrible." I said, "Knock it off, kids. This keeps your mother in business."
That's right.
And the conversation would just end.
Yeah, there you go. That's one way to get them to be quiet. I exactly. As you said, you were with WJZ for a long time. You were let go in December, and I think that's the fear everyone in TV has, especially with some of the dire predictions of the industry predicted downfall.
Yes, that
you know, that the management, for any number of reasons, they can come to you and say, "Look, we're not going to renew your contract." And maybe yours is a little bit different because you're working for iHeart and not necessarily for the TV station. But for whatever reason, WJZ said, "All right, we're not going to renew the contract," and then you were going to have to be moving on. Did you see that? Did you see it coming, or was it a total shock?
It was pretty much a total shock. I'm not going to lie to you. Now, I enjoyed all my time at WJZ. Like I said, I had been filling in for them. I was there from 2005 to 2024. And then in 2011, I became their permanent afternoon person. In 2020, they moved me over to the mornings. But we got a new general manager about 2 years ago, and I was called up one day, me and my boss, and I was just told that they were going to take traffic in a different direction effective immediately. So I definitely did not see that coming, but I wasn't the only one that had happened to. But like they say, everything happens for a reason. I had a great run at WJZ. I absolutely loved the people. But I feel, honestly, Jason, that I'm exactly where I should be right now at WMAR, because it's a wonderful place. And I can't say enough about the people and the station.
Yeah, going in a different direction, pardon the pun. I hope he didn't
exactly.
that to you.
They did. Absolutely did. My boss was with me, and word for word, I remember us looking at each other and the general manager thanking me for my 20 years of service, but saying they were taking traffic in a different direction effective immediately.
What is that direction now? What are they doing since you left?
Well, since I left, they had a couple of, you know, I'm not sure if they were thinking about not doing traffic or doing it a different way, but they started doing voiceovers for a while. And from what I understand recently, they did replace me with another anchor. Her name is Angela Foster, and she's actually a friend of mine. Very, very nice person. Have no ill will towards her. And it's actually funny because she used to be the traffic anchor at Channel 2 10 years ago. So it's kind of like we reversed roles.
Ah. Perfect. Nice. My guest is Christy Breslin. She's the traffic anchor for our sister station in Baltimore, Maryland, WMAR-TV. You probably knew the former WMAR traffic anchor, Lauren Cook, who was there.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. She was there for a long time. And I know she left well over, I know it was a year ago or so, and the station was without anyone doing traffic for a while on a regular basis, right, until you arrived. So how did that unfold, going from nothing, where in December you were being told they were going in a different direction, and then a month or two later, boom, you're now with WMAR.
Actually, I would credit Kelly Groft, the news director, with that. I've known her for a very long time, and I had let her know that I was free, and it took a couple of months, but then it actually worked out. But Lauren Cook, I can't say enough about. Lauren Cook is a personal friend of mine, and I think that she's a saint. Lauren Cook has small kids, and she also has a father with a medical illness, and she decided to step back to take care of her kids and help out with her father. So I absolutely love her, and Lauren Cook was one of the first people to congratulate me.
I've talked to her a few times back in the day, and yeah, she was always distracted by her kids and by other issues. So I'm glad that she's doing okay.
Yeah, she's doing great. And let me tell you, what a good, solid, sweet person. She's just, I really can't say enough about her, and very classy too.
Now, since you work for iHeartMedia, you do TV, and you're contracted to do the TV thing, but do you also do radio station? I think there's a radio station 100 point something that you do traffic for?
Well, I did. And the problem is they were a partner with WJZ. So I was actually doing TV and radio at the same time.
Yeah, how do you work that out?
Oh, Jason, it was tough. I was running back and forth, but they had a radio booth inside the WJZ studios. So I would do TV and then I'd run over and do radio twice an hour and then I'd come back and do TV. So it was pretty much TV every 8 minutes and radio. So took a lot of discipline, but 100.7 The Bay, it was absolutely fabulous. Love the people over there. But unfortunately, since they are a partner with WJZ and now I'm working for a competitor, I couldn't continue that. But yeah, the 100.7 The Bay staff, every single one reached out to me and said what a great time they had with me because I did it for over a year and they were happy for me that I was staying in TV and I was going to such a wonderful place.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and you now host, I mean, you still do, as you talked about earlier, host this show on Hartford TV, and you talk about some of the best nonprofits that are there in Baltimore. So how is you able to keep up with that and doing your TV duties and all of your other duties?
Well, the good thing is, since it is a Hartford Cable network, so the show is only shot once a month. So once a month, I feature a different nonprofit. I go to that nonprofit. I write a script. I interview four or five different people. I mean, we put together a really nice production. And these nonprofits out there, I host about 25 nonprofit events a year. I've been doing it my entire career. I've never charged any of them a dime. These nonprofits fight for every single dollar. So it's a passion of mine. So I get to meet so many people and I feature these nonprofits and they're able to take this 30-minute show, which is aired on the network, but it's also, we have a link that we can send to other people and a lot of them use it as a marketing strategy. And it just makes me so happy. I get to meet so many people and I get to help them.
I know I do that too, where I MC events and the nonprofits will come up and ask if I could do it one, you know, I usually try to limit it to once a month or so. And I, of course I don't charge either anybody. And there are people who do, and I know them and they charge, you know, several thousand dollars for an appearance fee. And I just can't imagine going to a nonprofit that you're supposed to be helping, especially for these benefits where they're supposed to be collecting money to help out people who might need that help, and you are collecting money from them. It's just, to me, it's awful.
Yes, I would never do it. I would never do it. And like I said, I started doing this when I was 21. So 25, I try and limit it to 25 a year, but it usually ends up going over, of course. But I enjoy it. I really do. And they're always so kind. You know, they have these galas. They treat me to a nice meal, and I have a good evening. Yeah. So to me, it's a win-win situation.
That is a lot of events. I mean, I maybe do it 10, 12, maybe, you know, 15 different things a year. But that's all. That's 25 is a ton.
Well, it's, and some of them, you know, it's not like on the weekends. Sometimes it's elementary school visits. Like I have elementary school visits coming up. I do college visits. You know, I MC lunches. You know, I MC breakfast. Sometimes I MC dinners. I do a lot with the school system though. And one of my favorite charities is Hartford Family House. I do a ton with them and they help the homeless population in Hartford County. So I help them raise money to get all these people off the streets because surprisingly, there is a huge, huge homeless population in Hartford County.
Interesting.
So it's awareness. You know how it is. Sure. It's awareness. We're just making people aware of the problems.
Of course. My guest is Christy Breslin. She's the traffic anchor at WMAR-TV in Baltimore. And of course, I wanted to talk about the big transportation story that's not just Baltimore. It really is a nationwide story. The devastating collapse of the Key Bridge. And I think we all know what happened at this point, but I want you to take us back to that morning. I imagine you were probably still sleeping when the ship hit the bridge at 1:30 in the morning. So how did you first find out what happened and what was your initial reaction?
Shock, disbelief. I mean, the bridge fell at about 1:28, 1:29. I knew about it about 1:45 because my executive producer and my traffic guys, who are just, you know, they are just absolutely fabulous. My producers that give me all this information, they said, hey, the Key Bridge has fallen. And I'm thinking, huh? No, what? No way. That sounds like something that would happen in a movie. But no, alas, it did. So I got right into the station and I'm sure that everyone has seen the video by now, but it's just shocking and it's so sad. And they have recovered three of the construction workers that have fallen from the bridge, but they're still looking for three more. Mm-hmm. So it breaks my heart, because when you watch the footage and you see the Key Bridge and you think about the families and you think about the people that just traveled over there and you think about, oh my gosh, how freezing the water is and hypothermia. And it was just an absolute nightmare. Not to mention, Jason, here's the biggest problem for us. We have, as you know, in traffic, we have the Harbor Tunnel, we have the Fort McHenry Tunnel. Well, a lot of these trucks that are carrying hazardous material or wide loads, they can't go through those tunnels. So they were relying on the Key Bridge. And also all of the work in the Port of Baltimore and all the ships coming through, it's not only affecting traffic, but it's affecting business as well.
Yeah. And it's one thing to just hear the news. So when you were waking up that morning and your producers are telling you, and EP's telling you, hey, the Key Bridge just fell over or just collapsed. It's another thing to see the video, and you must have had certain feelings when you were actually watching, because I'm sure you picked up your phone and you go, there's no way, and you see the video. What was that feeling like when you actually watched the video of the ship hitting the bridge and then the bridge coming down?
How could this be happening? This is the Key Bridge. This is a huge part of Baltimore. I've been over that bridge hundreds of times. You know, it's iconic, and it's just, you, my first thing is, how big was the ship, you know, that could take a whole bridge down? Yeah. But when you watch it and then you learn about the dolly and you learn about all the background, I did all the research on it, and it's just such an unfortunate, it's a tragedy. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah. Like you said, you grew up there. I mean, you have a connection with this iconic bridge. And when you look from downtown Baltimore out through the Sound and through the bay, I mean it's there, and or it was there. I mean, now you're looking at it and it's not there when it was.
Yes, I mean, it's surreal. It really is. And I've been, obviously, as a traffic reporter, I've been obsessed with it. I've seen every image. I've seen every picture, you know, and of course, people had conspiracy theories. Well, how did that happen? And, you know, the ship lost power, it lost steering, and it crashed, and it wasn't intentional. Nobody did it, but it's an absolute tragedy because it's affecting people so much. And not only is it affecting the Port of Baltimore, but like you said, it's affecting the roads, because now around the Baltimore Beltway, which is already congested, we're seeing a lot more activity there. And the Harbor Tunnel and the Fort McHenry Tunnel, they're just packed because those are your alternates. But we're seeing a lot of the trucks and a lot of the tractor trailers and everything. They have no choice but to go around the Beltway now.
Right. And I would think after a while, it usually becomes for drivers a new normal. So how are the commuters? You said they were just packing into the tunnels. Is that really the only way they can get around it, is just deal with the now heavier delays that they're going to go through the tunnels trying to get from one side to the other?
Unfortunately, for a lot of people, yes. I mean, you've got 95, you got 895. Now, you could take some alternate routes, but it's still going to add on time. And by the time you go out of your way to go to those alternate routes, it's pretty much, the time delay is pretty much going to even out. So we are in a spot here in Baltimore where there's really no way to get around it unless you take those alternates, and everyone's taking those alternates. So what I'm suggesting to people is travel off hours. If your boss is really nice, ask if maybe you can work remotely a couple of days until they get this whole situation figured out. But every report, I sound like a broken record. Yeah. The collapse of the Key Bridge. Here's your alternates. Here's what we're up against. And every day, especially when it rains, it's a new problem.
How long do you expect to be talking about it in that way, where it is still almost fresh for folks, and not just the new normal where the bridge isn't there, so most folks know about the bridge is not there and they need to find their new normal?
Well, it's funny that you say that. So that's pretty much the term that I'm using, because it's Tuesday was 2 weeks. So I always say in my reports, I'm like, I know that I sound like a broken record. I know that I do. But until you get used to this, this is our new normal. These are our alternates. This is how you're going to get around. So, I mean, everybody's kind of adjusting to it. Everyone knows about it. There's no way that you could not know about it. But people are still trying to figure it out. Like, how am I going to get to where I need to go? How am I going to get there on time? Am I going to have to leave early? A lot of people have told me that they've adjusted their hours. So it's a big adjustment for the entire community here in Baltimore.
I don't know if you've noticed this, and if you use Google Maps often like I do, that they now have, if you look where the Key Bridge was, they have an open gap where the bridge used to be, and it used to be a continuous roadway, you know, with the traffic flow and everything. But now they've actually segmented it where there's no traffic flow, obviously, where the piece of bridge is missing.
Oh, I've seen it. And when I just look at it and I just stare at it and I'm thinking, is this real?
Yeah, it's creepy.
It really is. I mean, it's just, it's gone. And a lot of times when I'm referring to the Key Bridge, it's like, how do you say the collapse of the Key Bridge? The Key Bridge is no more. You know, it's very difficult to say. And I just think about the families, Jason. I just think about these families with these workers that, who could have possibly known that anything was going to happen like that. But they're starting fundraisers. And a lot of people are donating, and there's Key Bridge emergency funds. I got a really cool shirt. It has Puppy on the back and the Key Bridge, and all of the proceeds are going to the emergency responders fund to help these families that are in desperate need.
I was frustrated because that morning I was tasked with talking about the bridge and about how traffic was being rerouted and from my traffic perspective. But it was frustrating for me knowing that there were police officers on either side of the bridge stopping traffic, which was great. But they weren't able to get up to those workers and say, you guys need to get off of here right now, and then race them off of the bridge.
Yes, unfortunately, we wish that would have happened. But, you know, with all the circumstances, every day we're learning something new about the collapse of the Key Bridge, something new that's happening. And we're hearing from different people and people's vantage points that are looking at the Key Bridge. And I've had a lot of people that have told me, I just went over the Key Bridge. There was one woman that had gone over the Key Bridge. I think she was a nurse, and she had probably gone over it 10 minutes before. So it's still just absolutely surreal. I can't believe that we're having this conversation, and I can't believe something this big happened in Baltimore.
My guest is Christy Breslin. She's the traffic anchor at WMAR-TV in Baltimore. Before the bridge issue, how was general traffic in Baltimore? Is it a big problem? Some cities are only heavy for like an hour. Obviously LA has LA traffic, New York has New York traffic, but what was the general traffic like around Baltimore when the Key Bridge was still up?
Well, I can tell you it was already not good because the Beltway backs up significantly every single day, particularly when it rains. So there was always a lot of congestion on the Beltway. There was always crashes at the Fort McHenry Tunnel and 895. And of course, we have the emergency toll booths because 95 is so congested. So we already had traffic issues here in Baltimore, and this just exacerbated it, took it to a whole new level. But we're no New York, we're no LA, but Baltimore is up there with heavy traffic because we have a lot of people that commute to DC. So we, 295 is a very, very busy stretch for us. So people coming from either direction, it's really impacting them. And a lot of people that are working down in Annapolis, it's affecting them. It's really affecting the whole state.
Yeah, I think that's the closest bridge now is down in Annapolis going across the Sound there, right?
The Bay Bridge. And a lot of people were just surprised. Like, if anybody thought anything was going to happen, a lot of people are afraid of the Bay Bridge. So I've heard a lot of traffic reporters mistakenly say the Bay Bridge, the Bay Bridge, because the Bay Bridge, a lot of people are afraid to go over that. But I've never heard anybody say they were afraid of the Key Bridge, and that's the one that collapsed. And then I'm sure that you've heard a lot of people are now have that phobia. And please excuse me, I have no idea how to pronounce it, the phobia of going over a bridge. And that's kind of more realistic now.
Yeah, I would think so, because especially when you start to see the shipping traffic come back, I think that's going to be a fear for a lot of folks when they do start to see more of the shipping traffic come back and they're looking at a bridge and going, all right, now do I wait? Do I pull over and just wait until the ships are gone? And then I feel more comfortable going across these bridges.
I think so. And I know that you've seen pictures of the ship, but the size of the ship, I could not believe how big that was. So when I first initially got the call, I'm like, how big was this ship? Was it a cruise ship? Oh no, it was way bigger than a cruise ship. I mean, it took the whole bridge down. And I'm telling you, I've watched that video so many times. I'm sure you have too.
Oh, sure. Oh, definitely. And just watching the traffic patterns there, a lot of folks are now using, the Bay Bridge and just trying to get around it that way. And it really, I guess that's all you can do is it's like that, almost induced demand where you take if you have a new roadway, people are going to want to use it. If you take away a roadway, people are going to have to try to find other ways to get around. And that's just natural. And then screws everything up, you know, down the line.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It does. So it's really tough right now in the Baltimore area, especially figuring out, how am I going to get where I need to go? How am I going to get there on time? And it's affecting, again, the Port of Baltimore. It's affecting people with their jobs. And, of course, most of all, the people that are missing loved ones.
Yeah, right. And, you know, because and then you have people that could be down on one side, you know, south in the Riviera Beach area, and then try to get over to, you know, the north side, or I guess it would be more the east side. And they're like right there, and it takes them now an hour probably to get around. It's just, I can't imagine what it would be like in a town like mine, Denver, where you have two major highways and you take one out, and then it's just chaos ensues.
Well, as you know, as a traffic reporter, when something happens, you say, give yourself a little bit of extra time.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that these days. I'm saying give yourself a lot of extra time. And if you don't have to travel, don't. If you can do remote for a little while until they get this all worked out, that is what I'm suggesting. So I really think a lot of companies are taking that into consideration right now in Baltimore. But you'll notice that a lot of people online are telling their stories about the Key Bridge and how it's affecting them and how it's affecting their families. And people are just having trouble getting where they need to go. But there's nothing that we can do because we don't have a time frame on when this is going to be completed. They're trying to get it completed as quick as possible, but that's a big landmark and that's a big job. So that's going to take us some time.
My guest is traffic anchor from WMAR-TV in Baltimore, Christy Breslin. I want to take you back to COVID. And were you sent, I'm sure, yeah, like everybody was, you had probably were sent home, but were you still doing traffic updates from home? And how were you able to do that?
Oh, Jason, that was great. I was doing traffic from my basement for a year, and the station had brought in a 4K camera. I had monitors. I had about 6 computer monitors. We built a state-of-the-art studio in my basement. So I was broadcasting from home for over a year. I had all the maps. You know, I was on camera for a little while, and I had the traffic monitor in the back where you could see the real-time traffic. I would go to my graphics and it would come back to me. So I was a one-man show and I enjoyed it. And I'm going to be completely honest with you here. One of the reasons I enjoyed it so much is because I have a King Charles Cavalier Spaniel and I absolutely love her. And she would stay at my feet every single day, the entire shift. Now, did she make a couple of appearances that weren't expected? Of course she did. But it was great. It was a great thing to do. And I just remember getting the call saying, time to come back in. And me thinking, oh, it was great while it lasted.
Yeah, I had a very similar story where we have now nicknamed Traffic Cat, who made several appearances on TV, also from my basement. And I still have the studio set up just in case I had to do afternoon traffic reports. I could just fire up the system and do it from home, you know, because we can get big time as snowstorm still, even in the spring here. So instead of me driving all the way back downtown and then driving all the way home, I get to do it from the basement. But I have a very similar story where, yeah, sent me home, did the basement setup, and then would just broadcast from here until it was just a random day. I think it was in October or November that year. So maybe 5 or so months after the whole thing shut down, they called me on a Tuesday and said, hey, can you come back into the station? We'd like for you to come back. And I said, okay, when? They said, how about tomorrow?
At least I got a week.
I said, well, I'd like to at least have a day to figure out if all the stuff works back there. So that was my recall notice.
Well, great minds think alike. I still have the studio set up in my basement. So if anything ever happened, I actually could go live at any time. And I remember when they told me I had to come back, I'm thinking, can I bring my dog? But no, couldn't do that.
How had traffic patterns, obviously it shut down, and so traffic was non-existent in most towns. But how did traffic patterns, if at all, change after COVID? I know it changed around here, especially I saw more midday traffic than regular morning and afternoon commute traffic. So did the patterns change right after as people were starting to move around again? And have they permanently changed?
I would say that at least in my situation, I feel like until the collapse of the Key Bridge, that it took – we're in 2024. It took 3 years, but I would say for the last 6 months, traffic has been back to how it was pre-COVID. But it took that long. But yes, during traffic, just like you, I would see a lot of different traffic patterns. I would see heavy traffic at very off-peak hours. I'd see a lot more heavy traffic around 4:30 in the morning. I'd see a lot of heavy traffic more around 9. And then I would even pay attention midday, and there'd be a lot more accidents during the middle of the day. And I'd think, okay, this is definitely COVID-related.
Yeah, I think people were just out getting lunch or because they were working from home and had to maybe send a package or go to the mailbox or whatever. And then they were out and about in the time when they were probably should have been working, but they didn't want to keep working from home. Everybody was a little bit challenged with how they were going to work from home and then also do all their regular daily things that they used to do.
Exactly. But I think that, you know, we got through it, thankfully, and I thought, for at least for us, I thought Baltimore was on the road to, oh, we're back to how things were before. But now we got a whole new problem out there. And with the collapse of the Key Bridge, we are in uncharted territory. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah. And it's going to be one of those things that's going to obviously last a lot longer than what happened in Philadelphia, where they had that bridge collapse after the tanker fire under there. And the bridge was able to be repaired after a week and a half or 2 weeks, where they thought it was going to be months, but then it was just 2 weeks. Obviously, this is a whole different situation where people are going to have to just get used to it. How long do you think you're going to have to keep telling people, hey, the bridge is down and you're going to have to find another way? Or is it just you're just going to start skipping over that part with it becoming just a part of everyday life?
I think once a couple of months go by, you know, I still will be that person that will say, okay, I know I sound like a broken record and just reminding people, but I think there will come a point where it'll just be normal. Like, people just know it's not there. And like you said, when you look at Google Maps, it's gone. It's not even on there anymore. So that, to me, I still can't get over the shock of that. So hopefully, I'm hoping that we have the situation that we had in Philly. I mean, obviously, it's not even close, but where they repaired it a lot quicker than they thought that they could. And there's so many people that are stepping up to the plate, so many people that are just sending their heartfelt condolences and really want to help Baltimore get back on their feet. We are Baltimore strong. We have a great community here. And I think everybody's really coming together to try to solve this problem and, again, help those families that have lost those loved ones.
And that probably will be the long-lasting memory for a lot of folks, is exactly what you just said. Now, before you go, I always ask my traffic anchor guests this question. What is your biggest traffic or transportation pet peeve?
Okay, do not text and drive. I still see it every single day. And it's so dangerous. People don't understand how many crashes that it causes. I mean, when your eyes are off the road, even for a small period of time, I mean, that's when all these accidents occur. And I have a teenage driver now. He just started driving. And believe me, my heart's in my stomach almost every day. He's a great driver. And he even says to me, why do you worry so much? I say, it's not you. I don't worry about you. But when I see somebody on their phone texting and driving, when there's so many other ways that you could do this, that is my biggest pet peeve. It absolutely drives me nuts because it's unsafe. And you're not only risking your own life, but you're risking the life of someone else.
And it's not just the texting part. It's just the using of the phone in any way. I see that all the time driving down the highway. And you can always tell, and I tell this to I have a daughter who's 15, and I'm teaching her how to drive too. And we see somebody ahead of us, and I could say, what do you think they're doing right now as they're halfway over the white line to the right side of the road? And she goes, they're probably looking at their phone. And that's exactly what they're doing.
It is. And it's so frustrating because everyone is aware of the dangers and what can happen when you text and drive. I mean, we've seen so many accidents here. I've had people, I work with one of the nonprofits. It's called the Brandon Tolson Foundation, and it's about parents that have lost young children, you know, teenagers, to different things. But a few of them have lost them to, unfortunately, texting and driving. I see it a lot, and it's unnecessary. It doesn't need to happen. And it's so preventable. So that, like, I could go on for hours about how angry that makes me.
What are the laws there regarding it? I'm sure it's just illegal to text and drive, but are there hands-free laws there in Maryland that would keep people from using their phone?
Yes, there are. And people still do it. That's one of my big issues. You know, you can drive and I have Bluetooth in my car. I don't even have to answer it. You know, if somebody calls, I can just say answer and it'll answer. There's so many different ways to go around it, but you still see people talking and you still see people texting. I've even seen people watching videos on their phone when they're driving. It's unbelievable.
Calling. Who calls anymore?
Exactly. Doesn't everyone text?
Maybe that's the problem.
I think it could be. It definitely could be part of the problem.
There you go. Well, Christy Breslin, the WMAR traffic anchor from Baltimore, thanks so much for your insights and all your information about the bridge and your feelings there and all your hard work that you do with nonprofits throughout the year and all your time that you've been giving back. So, hey, thanks for being here, and I really appreciate your time.
You're the best. Thank you so much. And congratulations again on your award. You've got a great voice. You've got a great show. And just congratulations on everything. And thank you so much. If you ever want to have me on the show again, just ask. I'd be happy to come on.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should bring Christy back on when the bridge is getting closer to maybe being reinstalled. And see how that is looking there in Baltimore. And I'm sure it's going to be welcome news for the folks there. That when that does happen, but we could be talking about 2 years, 3 years, probably close to 4 years before any kind of structure is implemented there, because you know how the speed of government goes, very slowly, and even with this kind of a expedited issue, they are still going to take some time to rebuild that bridge, and then you have to think: are they going to rebuild it in the same look as they had before? Obviously, the technology from the mid to late 70s when that bridge was originally constructed. I mean, the planning was in the early 70s. Then they did the construction over several years in the mid 70s. I think it was 1977 when they finally had it up and open. And so the technology between then and now is completely different. And then are they going to change how the structures look, the pilings look that are going to be holding up that structure? And if you looked at the way that bridge was constructed, it fell down like a like Tinker Toys kind of a thing, or Erector Set, I should say. Not really Tinker Toys, but like an Erector Set, where it was just because it was all balanced on and with certain angles. So it was a stunningly interesting looking bridge, and it folded in a certain way because of the way it was constructed. So are they going to rebuild it the same way? Are they going to build it in a different way, maybe stronger, more structurally sound? So if something like this happened again, would the bridge come down in the same way? All those questions are still yet to be answered, and all that planning has to be done first, and all those decisions have to be made first before the bridge is then starting. Then they start construction, which you know will take a long, long time. So it'll be interesting to keep up with that whole situation. And thanks again to Christy for coming on the show and sharing her expertise and her insights and everything. And welcome to the EW Scripps family of TV stations. Yay! Okay. We'll see. Well, thankfully, you know, she's working for iHeart, which I kind of worked for iHeart when it was still Clear Channel Communications when I was working for them, and then left. It was JCorp that was bought by iHeart. No. Clear Channel, and then iHeart, they changed their name. So anyway, good for Christy, and I hope it works out a lot better now than it did in the past. So anyway, thanks again for being here. Thanks for listening. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can, of course, send those to me. All my contact links are in the description of this show. So thanks again for being here. Thanks for listening. And until next time, I'm Jason Liber, the traffic guy. Be safe, and as always, happy motoring.